So Paul wants to complain about AppKit some more.
Do I? Yeah. I totally forgot. I, you know, I've been up since like 4 a.m. and
was it because of daylight savings time or just because of general?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Just got up and started to putz around and write some code and break stuff. And now I'm in the middle of breaking stuff. So now I got to fix the stuff that I've just broken, which is pretty typical.
Breaking anything specific?
Oh, I'm playing around with all the sync stuff. So trying to get CloudKit stuff to work, which is kind of fun, but it's definitely a lot of moving parts that need to come together.
Okay, we should introduce you.
Paul Haddad of TapBots, maker of TweetBot, CalcBot, and several other... Are any other bots still active?
Not at this time. It's just the...
They're recharging.
Yeah. I'd still like to do... bring Waitbot back at some point if we can, one, get the time to do it, and two, figure out, you know, something that makes sense.
Sweetie Touch, you could stand on your phone.
Oh, there you go. You know, they've rejected a few apps that use 3D Touch for weighing stuff already. So there was one that weighed, I think, peaches for whatever reason, and another one that did coins or something.
You'd put a spoon down, and then you could put something on top of the spoon because they wanted the conductivity.
Right. There were spoons, there were coins. I don't know what they were doing, but that all got rejected.
I think it's a really cool idea, but I also think that they're probably rejecting them based on putting heavy stuff on your phone is not good.
Although that was the demo when this company, I forget if it was Huawei, it was one of the companies trying desperately to beat Apple to market, and they announced force press for their phones a week before Apple did. It wasn't shipping, but they announced it, and then they proceeded to show demos of weighing fruit.
Well, it's something, right? I mean, there's probably a use for that somehow. Assuming it doesn't break your screen or...
Yeah, there's probably something cool there for sure. I think for the general purpose scale, I think we've got that solved.
Yeah.
But if something in your pockets could be pretty cool.
I mean, I don't necessarily need to weigh stuff, small quantities of stuff that often. But then again, I don't live out in California where that kind of stuff's probably more useful.
That's so true. Many ways to interpret that statement.
So, how'd the launch go? TapBots 4 just came out.
It went really well. We're quite happy with it. Probably our best month ever sales-wise, or very, very close to it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Better than 3?
Yeah, better than 3. Better response than 3 as far as, I guess, fewer people complaining that, hey, it's a paid upgrade, and more people understanding that, the whole buy once, it's free forever thing doesn't work for most apps.
That's great. So the market's maturing a bit, do you think?
Either it's maturing, or all the people who were very upset by us doing it last time just didn't buy it and weren't around again.
Yeah, but you got more people anyway, so whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a valid thing to do. I think more developers should do it. It's like I said earlier, the whole you write an app once and you keep developing it for years and years without, trying to get some more money out of your loyal users just doesn't work. That's why so many of the indie developers that were around a few years back aren't around anymore, because I guess they try to, they tried to go for that, and it turns out that after a while your sales are going to decline. And even now the top paid chart, getting to the top of it is means a lot less money than it did a few years back. The, you know, the amount of money the top 10 people are making isn't, I think, as much as they were making 2-3 years ago. So, you know, I think, or I hope more people start, you know, realizing that, you know, the old ways of, you know, doing paid upgrades, you know, need to come back. Hopefully Apple realizes that at some point, but I'm not really holding my breath on that one.
Right. So you think we're in a bit of a shakeout period, or we will be soon?
Oh, I think we have been for a while. I mean, you know, there's so many developers who, you know, were in the App Store and now are at Apple or Facebook or Twitter or, you know, one of the large companies because, you know, after a while, it's just, you know, the market kind of, I don't want to say collapsed, but it definitely has shrunk from what it used to be. People, I think, are buying fewer apps. And again, if you release an app once and hope that, you know, people just keep buying it forever and that you can just keep throwing, you know, your development time into updating that app without, you know, getting something back for it, it just doesn't work.
Right. So how long did you guys spend on TapBots 4?
That's a good question. I know Mark said 8 months, but he spent time, you know, figuring out what was going on before I did. So I would probably say, you know, my side of things about 6 months. Most of that was low level stuff that is hard to notice. I mean, the whole activity tab involves a lot of both local and server code that, you know, nobody realizes because, you know, Twitter doesn't provide that kind of information. So you kind of have to store it on a server and keep track of it and, you know, give it back to the app when it's needed.
And that took, what was the big feature, really?
I think probably activities was the was the big feature, just being able to see who favorited your stuff and retweeted and quoted and one, you know, particular tab along with all the stats. And that's probably the biggest feature. Also, obviously, iPad support, adding that back in, supporting all the different adaptivity modes, especially with a lot of the custom UI that we have was somewhat tricky. A lot of the stuff you get for free, we didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the gamble, right, when you do something custom.
Yeah, it looks real nice, but then, you know, a year later, you're stuck trying to you get it to work with whatever crazy new stuff Apple comes up with.
Yeah, exactly. So how is the iPad support? Like what? So you removed it and added it back in. Is that the story? Like, well, I mean, I kind of want to understand the rationale behind it.
It's safer to say like we never
had two separate apps for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. We never updated the iPad version for 3.0 or 3.x. So it's, I wouldn't say we removed it or we added and then added back in. It was more like we expanded the iPhone support to support iPad as well.
Okay.
And kind of just deleted all the old stuff that was there.
Okay. And did you do that by adopting like size classes and that kind of
thing? Yeah. I mean, we pretty, you know, we try to stick with, you know, size classes and auto layout and all the stuff Apple suggests you use to do that. And it seems to have worked pretty well. For example, I haven't done too much about it, but I have ran the app on the iPad Pro and it seems to behave on the iPad Pro simulator and it seems to behave, you know, reasonably well, does the things you expect it to do. There's definitely some room for improvement, you know, some I don't know what we'll do with it, but I'm sure we'll do something with it. But for the most part, it's just, you know, launches and runs and does, you know, what I would expect is reasonable behavior for, you know, the majority of actions I tried on it.
That's pretty good. Is that, was that a significant amount of work to add back?
I think the biggest issues was getting our custom UI bits to work with the adaptivity stuff. So, for example, we have our custom little action sheet that pops up from the bottom of the screen and, you know, shows the different button actions you can do, like unfollow or message or whatever. And getting that to work properly with the adaptivity where it changes from, you know, a thing that slides down from the bottom to a popover and back again, depending on where you, you know, slide your finger on the iPad. It took quite a bit of time. And, you know, the API that Apple provides, I think, doesn't quite expect you to create some of these items on your own, some of these elements on your own. They expect you to use the built-in ones. And so, you know, it's not the greatest thing in the world.
Fight on your hands?
Those. Yeah.
You guys also moved to using the Safari View controller.
Yes.
What's your experience with that? Was that, do you think that was a good move or a bad move? Or,
I definitely think.
You must have thrown out a lot of code, right?
No.
No,
not really. It was all pretty much encapsulated into one class, so it wasn't a ton of code. And I think definitely long term, it's the right thing to do. Short term, it's been a little painful because there's still some bugs with Safari View Controller, especially logging into Twitter. Sometimes something gets into a bad state with the user's cookies. And we haven't quite figured out what it is, but for some users, they just can't log in.
And so Safari View Controller, the View Controller is not in your process, right? It's in Safari.
That's my understanding. It's kind of separate and totally out of your control. You don't really get much of a visibility into what's going on other than you tell it, hey, go open a URL. And
right. So just for the listeners, like that cookie management is kind of out of your hands, right?
Right. Cookie management, passwords, you can't, and you really can't do anything. You can't see what's going on in the browser, which is good for stuff like logging in, because then you're, you know, you can't, you know, spy on a password, for example. Not that we would do that, but, you know, if running
some bad actor could,
right, if you're running something in Safari View Controller, the apps can't do that at all.
Yeah, which I think Safari View Controller is a big win across the board, really. But web browsers inside apps are like, there's so many little finicky custom points that you want to add.
And, you know, for apps like Facebook and Twitter, it gets trickier because they do all sorts of crazy stuff. Like they'll subsidize connections in some countries, and you can't really do that kind of stuff with the Safari View Controller. And
I think Chrome.app still uses UI WebView because it wants to do the cookie management.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely reasons why that doesn't work for some apps. And, you know, it would be interesting to see if Apple adds ways to do that while keeping the security and privacy benefits of Safari View Controller, but kind of I don't know if even that kind of stuff is possible. What they need to be able to support all their users in other countries, and what you know, Apple can provide as far as API while still keeping that, you know, separation is, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if that's possible. So they might be stuck using the WK WebView or UI WebView for a while.
Right. Was there much debate when you decided to go to Safari View Controller?
No.
No. Not, it was not, just like, this really is the next thing. And, yeah.
Yeah. And it, for us, there's really no, other than obviously the bugs, there's not really much of an issue. We don't really, you know, we don't do anything with the connection other than, you know, show whatever link they go to. So, you know, I don't care about cookies or what URL they're at or anything like that. I'd actually, right. you know, prefer handing it off and not being responsible for it.
Yeah, that would be my attitude too. Like, yeah. I don't want to be responsible for any of this kind of stuff. Just go do it.
Right.
Make it safe and secure and let me know what happens.
You did get some complaints online. Like, it's harder to dismiss. Like, before you could gesture to dismiss, and action extensions aren't fully implemented in Safari View Controller yet. So,
right. And at least the action extensions, I hopefully will be fixed soon. I believe that was in the release notes for 9.2. Although I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not, but I saw it on Twitter anyway, so I'm sure it's
out there.
It's out there. So hopefully the action extension side of things gets fixed, or, you know, gets fixed soon. The whole dismiss gesture is an issue. You know, Apple's obviously aware of it because that was the number one complaint before I kind of hacked my way around it. But you know, hopefully they'll get that fixed in a reasonable manner, so you can kind of push the Safari View Controller and slide
what was your
back.
Hack again?
It's basically a take over the left 20, 30 pixels of the screen and just sit there and watch for a swipe on there. And if there's a swipe, it, you know, dismisses it like you're swiping back a page.
Do you do that with a separate view slapped on top, like an yep. invisible view?
Yeah. Yep. It's a view and a UI screen edge swipe gesture recognizer yeah. thingy. And seems to work reasonably well.
That
it took
sense.
A while to get it, you know, to look right. And even yeah. the version in the App Store doesn't quite swipe back as well as I would like, and hopefully our next upcoming release improves that a little bit.
Yeah, well, look, that kind of stuff sounds touchy-feely, especially when you're trying to mimic some other action on the system. It's like, yeah,
definitely the push animation, push pop animation could be provided by Apple's, you know, some of those timings could be provided by Apple's. So we wouldn't have to kind of guess and hack around and put fake timings in. But, you know, for the most part, it definitely feels a lot better now. We've gotten mm-hmm. a lot less complaints once we've put that in. You do lose the ability to go back and forth on pages or back on pages, but you know, for Twitter, most of the time you're going to a single page, reading
it. Well, that's worth explaining. So the universal, I guess the reason Apple didn't do it initially is because the universal back gesture was being used within the view controller to go back a page if you navigated away from it.
Yeah, but they could deal with that. I mean, we had that in 3.x with the old view controller and with the old WK WebKit. View control. I never remember the name of those things. They keep they change them every iOS version, so it's like whichever one the last one was. But what we did there was we would basically swipe back until, you know, swipe back through web pages until you got through the root level, and once you got through the root level, you swipe back the entire controller. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely ways to do it.
Yeah, it's like an Android back button, really.
Yeah.
Just keep popping the stack until you run out.
And it's the very top. And as long, you know, yeah. the only issue I ever had with that was YouTube and their crazy thing where they, like, as soon as you click on a link, they redirect twice or something, and it's super annoying. But then again, pretty much anything YouTube related is super annoying.
Although Apple's got the back button and the force press gesture to go back, so they sort of they've separated out the inter and intra app navigation.
Yeah, and that works pretty well most of the time, except again in YouTube's case, where if you actually go to you click on a video and it pops you to their app, the first thing they do is they hide the nav bar, so the go back button disappears, which I don't get, but that's what happens.
I uninstalled it.
Yeah, that's actually my suggestion, is like just uninstall the YouTube app, because it just makes things worse. It makes the entire experience worse. I don't want to go to if I'm browsing some web page and I click on a YouTube video, I just want to watch it in there. I don't want to pop over to their app and have to, come back later to Safari or wherever I'm at.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it seems with these deep linking things, Apple is trying to move away from web pages, right? Inside apps. So,
yeah. Well, not just inside apps, but also like inside Safari, right? That's the universal link thing. And I mean, I suppose it's nice in some cases, but I tend to just disable it whenever I get hit by it. And, I have a lot of devices, so I'm disabling it all the time, and it just drives me nuts, because, I don't want that to be the default behavior. If I'm in Safari, I'm on a web page, I want to stay in Safari and just go to the next web page. There's very, very rarely a time when I actually want to pop over to an app.
Do you think that's so I do the same thing. Do you think that's because we preserve behavior we're accustomed to, or that inherently jumping over to the apps is sort of breaks context?
I don't know. It bothers me because, I don't mind web pages for most things. I don't, I don't ever install the web apps for, or the apps for websites. So that's just not something I generally do.
It's a little ironic because you have Tweetbot is an app.
Yeah, but Twitter
to not
me,
to be
zing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm cracking a joke.
No, but Twitter to me isn't a website. It's a messaging service.
I totally agree. Yeah.
I don't use the website for that. But if I'm going on The Verge for some reason, I don't want to launch The Verge app. I want to just go to the website and read the website and then go do something else.
Sure.
So
the worst part of deep links to me now is it launches the official Twitter app.
Yeah. And then you have to disable it, which isn't too hard unless you have, 10 different iOS devices and you're updating them weekly, like I do. But I wish... I wish there was a way to just turn that off system-wide. I wish Apple had provided a way for third parties to hook into that, so that if people like that, they could have it open in whatever app they want, not just the app that's blessed by that particular website.
So that's my understanding is that's a security thing. So it's not for you per se, but it's for a bad actor who would do a man-in-the-middle attack by sort of forcing in an app that would take over your Facebook links or your Twitter links.
Yeah, but then Apple could just say, the first time you click on an app or click on a link, could say, this app has registered to open this link. Would you like to go to it or open in Safari? Which would actually fix the other problem of not wanting that behavior, because you could just cancel out of that. And it's, I think, similar behavior to, what happens on the Mac side of things when, you double click on a new file, it'll ask you which you know, app you want it to launch in.
For the file extension.
If there's nothing registered. Right. But it's the same kind of idea. So I don't know. I think there's definitely the Apple could have done it differently. I mean, it's not like you can run apps on iOS without their blessing anyway. So it's, you know, they could certainly, you know, look at the properly list entries where when you submit an app and say, hey, your app has nothing to do with Facebook, but it's registered, you know, for Facebook, you know, why is that? Can you explain yourself? So I don't know. I don't quite buy that security argument.
Yeah. I think some of it they don't notice. You know what I mean? Like they don't have to interact as a third party does.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an argument. I just don't necessarily think it's a strong enough argument.
No, I'm not trying to make a strong argument. I'm just trying to come up with an explanation. I think also often they are reluctant to add any complexity to the system.
Yeah, but they did that anyways, right? And now we have when you click on one of those apps, not only do you have the back button up at the status bar, now you have a forward button on the status bar too. So
yeah, that gets a little
kind of added the complexity already.
Yeah, it gets a little bit weird. But I mean, those would still be there, and you would have to pick which thing in the middle you were going to jump into.
Yeah. But then again, like, at least if you have to pick something, you'll understand how not to do it, right? Because right now, a lot of people don't understand how you can disable that action.
Right.
It just happens by default. And like, I don't want this to happen. What do I do?
Yeah.
And you kind of have to go back to the link and, you know, long press on the link and, you know, change the action then.
Yeah, it's annoying. I land in the default Twitter client way more often than I care to admit. Right. I don't know why I don't just delete it.
Well, like I said, you can. I think actually if you click on the forward arrow up on the status bar, it'll disable that, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I mean, I keep the client around for comparison's sake. Sure. And for, you know, I want to have it. Also, if anybody works on it, sorry, guys. I'm not knocking it. I just prefer other clients.
they definitely do a lot of things really well. They cater to a different type of user than we do, and they're, you know, I don't have really anything bad to say about it.
Right. That's been one of the interesting things about Twitter clients on iOS and the Mac in general is that it's a very cordial environment. Everybody's kind of nice to each other.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I know the Twitterific guys. I know a lot of the people working on the Twitter iOS client. And, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about them. I'm friendly with pretty much all of them. So,
except Huckleberry.
Even him.
Even him,
in all caps.
Wow. You do have a big heart. He's awful. How is the okay? So, Twitter itself, you're. I'm backing out three levels here. You're kind of dealing with two giants that can be a little bit wacky at times, right? And by wacky, I mean not always have developers' interests first, which is, you know, Apple and Twitter. That's a bit of a rough spot to be, right?
Well, I mean, all iOS developers have to deal with Apple, so it's not.
Yeah, you just
that's got, not like an particularly
added.
Yeah, I definitely wish the relationship with all third party Twitter developers was better. You know, it kind of seems to fluctuate throughout the years and months, and you know, there's some hopefully promising stuff.
Yeah, so there was a
coming out, but
yeah, a conference recently, right? Flight.
Yeah.
And just for the backstory for the listeners, I don't even know it. Jack's Back is basically the sum of it. Dick Costolo is gone. Who was after Dick Costolo?
No, he was a recent. Oh, who's before him?
Oh, before him, yeah.
I don't remember either. Is it Ev? Well, I don't remember.
Anyway, they just long story short. Over the years, they initially started with a very open API, which is why all of these clients flourished, and frankly, why Twitter flourished too. And then closed it in order to try to get some money. It seemed like, and that's been kind of failing them, or at least they haven't been growing as much as the market would like them to grow. So now they've brought back Jack, the original founder, and he, at a recent conference, did he try to mend fences with third-party people?
It's hard to say.
Right.
He wanted to mend fences with developers, whether that means they're third-party Twitter developers or their developers who use their Fabric tools is kind of up in the air right now. It could be either, it could be both. There wasn't really enough information there to say.
Yeah. So I suppose it's not information to get excited about in any way.
No, I mean, they acknowledge that, you know, there are issues and that, you know, they've heard our concerns. What they do about that is the thing that's kind of a big unknown at this point. But that's more than has happened in the recent past. So that's hopefully a good thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose you still had some faith in the platform because you did spend the 8 months working on 4, right?
Yeah, and we kind of, you know, we wanted to do it, and we did it. You know, there's definitely not a lot of people putting in that kind of effort anymore on the third-party infrastructure, and maybe we're crazy. I don't know. But, yeah, and I still enjoy the product. I still enjoy using Twitter. And, you know, I hope we all figure out a way that, you know, we can work together.
Yeah, me too. Because, I mean, like you said, Twitter, to me at least, has always been a communication service. I very rarely use the website, and only when I've kind of landed there by accident somehow.
Right. And, you know, Twitter is trying to get the next 300, 600, whatever million people. And we're trying to focus on the original, you know, 300 million or whatever, and keep those guys happy. So I definitely think there's enough room there for both of us.
Yeah.
And like I said, I hope Jack sees it that way.
Yeah. I do find it funny that people are saying Twitter's too small when it's like it's immense. Yeah. I mean, but, Facebook is so huge that everything looks small by comparison.
Well, that's also the thing, is that Facebook has made a ton of money by having an incredibly good native ad platform because they just own the timeline. It's almost impossible for anyone else to view that timeline without seeing all their stuff in it.
Yeah, and, you know, Twitter is a public company, so there's always shareholders who insist on growth above everything else. And, you know, I think Twitter definitely has a, you know, core set of users who are, you know, really engaged in the platform and are happy. And that's kind of who we're trying to, you know, market for, who we're trying to keep happy yourselves. So,
right. So how does your marketing effort work? How do you get the word out about Wait? I kept saying Waitbot. Tweetbot.
We don't really do much marketing, or I guess traditional marketing. We definitely make sure that we get the word out on our Twitter accounts, our corporate Twitter accounts and personal ones. And then we make sure that all the different sites out there are aware that, you know, we're releasing a new version and mm-hmm. try to get beta versions for everybody. But other than that, we don't do ads or anything like that, or at least we haven't in a few years now. Haven't found any of those to be particularly useful.
I suppose that works well because you're already going after an audience that's pretty engaged and it's going to be, have its ear to the ground a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you still, you'll be surprised like how, you know, even with, you know, however much press coverage we got and tweeting about it and everybody in your timeline tweeting about it, there's still people who are like, oh, there's a new version out, you know, a month later. So, you know.
Well, it's also a separate app and you have to get people off the app they're using and onto the new app, which is not what the App Store is really designed for.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a fun part of doing this whole, you know, paid upgrade type thing. People don't understand it because Apple doesn't really support it in a, you know, reasonable way. So,
yeah, was it you today, guy, that Ken Case was tweeting out about renaming the old OmniFocus to Legacy Edition or something?
Yeah, I'd had a Twitter conversation with him a while ago, and we were spitballing names for like the old apps. And he ended up going with like Legacy Collection, I think.
And knowing the way App Store search works, that probably will show up before the new versions, which is a whole problem in itself.
Legacy sounds awesome. Let's put that first. They need to fix that. They don't need to because they don't care. They're making money hand over fist. But I think if they want to have a healthy ecosystem, they're going to have to address this kind of stuff. Yeah, and I would say sooner or later, but sooner has already gone. It's like it's been years now. So.
It's a problem on iOS, and it's a probably even bigger problem on Mac, where you know, you're selling fewer units and there's fewer users. And
at least on the Mac, you have alternate distribution channels if you want to use them.
Yeah, that's exactly. You're exactly right, Paul. It's difficult on the Mac. There is the ripcord, though, of just being like, okay, well, we're getting out of the Mac App Store.
Yeah, but then you lose iCloud, which is really nice to have for, you know, some apps.
And then you still need to do the migration thing because you had people on iCloud and now they don't.
At least you can, right? I mean, you can definitely migrate away from the App Store. It's actually surprisingly harder to migrate into the App Store.
Yeah, they have a few provisions for it, but not that many.
Right.
You can have like an info plist for like how to get migrate stuff in.
Yeah, but you can't really say, okay, you can migrate in and only pay 50% of the price.
Oh, that, yeah, no.
Right, because it's a new version. Like if you, for something like 1Password, you're one or the other, right? You either buy the Mac App Store version or you buy the version from their direct store, but you can't really go back and forth easily.
Yeah. Generally, if it's somebody I know, I'll just ask them which they prefer. But I naturally prefer the Mac App Store.
Yeah, but, you know, I definitely prefer that too. It's just, you know, it's kind of been neglected.
I agree. You know, what I like about it is I can just, when I set up a new Mac, which, you know, we're developers, it happens pretty often that we have to. You start like a new OS or like a beta OS or something, and you end up with a blank machine, and then you want to get all your goodies. So you can just being able to go to the App Store and install a whole bunch of tools that you need, or like you know, your favorite stuff is huge. That's so much easier than having to dig through like license files and stuff.
And if you ever look at the you can do this on Mac too. But if you ever look at the Windows download sites, even when they're provided by major companies, they always festoon you with toolbars and plugins and other things that just junk up the download process.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think it could be. It's good, but it could be a lot better. And I don't know why. You know, people have been saying this for years. Yeah, there's obvious problems with both of the app stores. I don't know why they they haven't been addressed. I don't know if Apple just doesn't think it's in their interest to do so, or, you know, are there technical reasons because, you know, iTunes Connect wasn't set up to allow for that kind of stuff, or what?
I would honestly, I would guess that they don't know quite how painful it is and those technical issues. I really don't attribute it to any kind of malice of like, screw those guys, we don't care. I just don't think they internally have wrapped their heads around it.
Yeah, I think they're aware that it's a big issue.
Well, it's also not a they. There's many different people with all different agendas. Yeah. Like, and some of them think it's a huge problem, and some of them think it's not a problem.
That's kind of what I mean. Yeah. That, like, just institutionally, they're kind of like, I don't know. They don't really know if it's important or not. Because the people that they don't deal with a lot of small developers, right? They deal with big guys.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sure we both have contacts, but the big guys are the ones that make that radar a lot, right?
Right, but even for the I was going to say even for the big guys, it's an issue. But most of the big guys are now either totally free or doing the whole IAP stuff. I mean, the whole top grossing chart is pretty much just that, in-app purchase junk with a few music services thrown in.
Yeah.
So
you've already tweeted 10 times today. Pay a dollar, you can tweet 10 more times.
No,
that would actually be a feature. Because if I go on a roll, it'd be good for me to have to shut up.
Automatically delete after 10 tweets.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or it'll wait 10 minutes to post any tweet. And if you pay a dollar, you can delete the tweet before it posts.
Yeah, yeah. I'm telling you, there's a breathalyzer bundle that you guys can make a fortune on. But is in-app purchase gross? I don't know. I mean, I still think of we write a Mac app for the Mac App Store, and you have to pay up front. But I still kind of think of like independent developers as shareware developers. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. But it's come from that. The histories come from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is in-app purchase much different than sort of a shareware or like an unlock a license idea?
No, and there's definitely reasonable ways to do in-app purchases, but there's also $100 for a bundle of coins that
the casino model.
Yeah, which is what's the overwhelming majority of that, top grossing chart, and they're making ridiculous amounts of money each day doing that, right? They're easily making six figures each day on on that model. And that to me is a gross model, but.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. I should also point out it doesn't always work. TapTap Revenge turned into one of those things by the end of his life, and it didn't make the kind of money they thought they were going to make off it. So people do this kind of weird gross model thinking that they're going to make Zynga money or old Zynga money, and then if they don't, now everything's just gross.
I'm still naive in thinking that one of the problems is that the App Store is split between Schiller and Q's org, and there's not one person whose only job it is every day to make the App Store an amazing product.
I agree with that. I mean, there probably is. There's got to be somebody who's in charge of the App Store.
No, well, there's a director of App Store in Q's organization, but DevRel and review and evangelism and all that is under Phil Schiller. And store management and editorial and a bunch of other stuff. And actually running the store is in Q's Oregon. It makes it hard to know who's who, and we see that. We see that all the time every year with the widget rejections or whatever. You see the results of not being unified the way that iOS and OS X was unified, online and retail stores were unified.
Rant. That would make a lot of sense to do.
Yeah, VP of App Store is my dream.
Well, the thing is, I don't know if you can just make a VP of App Store, right? Because you could do it. But will they have to pull in the other organizations to actually get anything done?
You need the right person, yeah.
Yeah, like you can create a job position, no problem. But unless everybody's bought into actually doing it, it kind of doesn't matter, right?
Which is what happened with Craig and with Angela, though. I mean, they had the right people for those jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Craig's been doing a good job, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's glad to hear that. that I approve.
And everyone, that's the thing. I think they're getting better at putting people in there who are just well-respected and do a great job.
I think so. Switching gears a bit, did you get a TV, Paul?
I did. I think I played with it for about 10 minutes, and that's about all I've had, I guess, time to do.
Are you not interested in it, or just not, like, literally not enough time?
And there's definitely not enough time. I don't think any of our apps are suitable for the TV.
Yeah.
I actually don't think most iOS apps are suitable for the TV. It's definitely an iPhone and an iPad are very personal devices, and a TV is kind of the shared experience type of thing. So, I think there's going to be great Apple TV apps. I don't necessarily think any of the great iPhone apps are going to be those.
Me too. Apps. And I think that shared experience is the key there. Like the fact that there's a giant screen and more than one person is going to be looking at it is the exact opposite from the intimacy of an iPhone, right?
Right.
Like getting a Twitter DM or like a message is something very personal, as opposed to what the TV is, which is, for the room to see.
It could be damaging if your DM shows up on a TV screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see you guys porting Tweetbot to the TV for like a kiosk mode or something.
Yeah, but then that's a totally different app, right. Totally different market. I mean, there's probably some small subset of people who want something Twitter related on their TV. It probably makes sense if you're at a conference and you want to display a certain hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the TV.
Yeah.
Not
pull
really
out video media that's going through the tweet stream.
Yeah, not really something we want to do. But there's probably a market there for it. I think stuff that involves like a whole family is really well suited for the Apple TV, and I think that's where we're going to see some really cool apps coming out. Wouldn't expect any of them to be out now because there really wasn't enough time to, do a whole new experience like that.
Yeah. Although I'm thrilled that they gave us a dev kit.
Yeah, that was definitely a nice little surprise. I feel guilty about not really using mine, but,
Yeah. Well, I'm not so happy with the way that they gave them out, but I love that they have a dev kit. It's wonderful. Well,
it seems like they were very... Or they gave a lot of them out.
Yeah, they did. It worked out in the end. But for a dollar it was a mistake, because I think a bunch of people who just bought them to get the cheap Apple TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I don't. Did they actually say it was going to be a dollar when they first announced it?
No, they didn't. But within instantly people knew it was a buck, and then it was over.
I didn't even realize it was a dollar. I thought it was full price when I signed up for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's because we're. It's our business, right? So I would have paid full price. I would have paid double or more.
Well, you come from the gaming world where there wasn't it thousands of dollars to get the dev kit and then thousands of dollars to submit each version.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't handle that personally. Doing like a $30,000 submission just to find a bug. But yeah, that's how the gaming world works. Well, they give you a dev kit, which is really prototype hardware. And I think you swear never to talk about it, so whatever. It's been like 10 years, so it's fine.
That Jaguar is not going to...
Yeah, nothing's going to attack me. But it's just totally prototype hardware. It doesn't really even look like what it's going to end up looking like. And they support it a lot, and it's a loaner. Like, you have to give them back, and then they give you the next version of the dev kit, depending on the company and all that stuff. But yeah, it's... It's serious business when you get a dev kit from the console world. But I would love that for an iPhone.
Yeah.
Can you imagine like a dev iPhone, Paul? How awesome that would be?
Well, like, yeah, I'm assuming...
Like, the debug cradle, you could just stick it in and it would be in, like, totally open.
I mean, I think I heard some of the rumors of the original iPhone, and you have to have a, like, for the few people that got to play with it beforehand, you have to have, like, a room that had no windows in it and mm-hmm. have to be, like, bolted down to a table and all
Same
sorts of...
Same with the iPad.
Maybe yeah. it was the iPad. I don't know what it was, but I'm like, okay, that's quite the setup, you know.
Yeah,
Apple and their secrecy.
Yeah, it's a bit extreme, but yeah. I'd be totally cool with. I guess it does make a lot of sense because they move up so quickly. I was going to say basically, like, don't show us the shape of it, but just give us something that we can work on with future tech, like a Force Touch. If we'd had that in our hands earlier, we right. could have done something, right?
Yeah, and. You know, that's definitely the same thing with the watch and same thing with the iPad Pro and pretty yeah. much every new device they release. I mean, they want support on day one. Yeah. They're going to have to open up a little bit and, you know, provide that to developers, which again yeah, is like, a nice like a new... thing they did with the TV.
Yeah, yeah. I've been publicly frustrated with the way they did it, but I love that they did it and I want them to do more of that. I love it. Like an iPad Pro early would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and even if don't charge a dollar. But
even if it's a week early, you know, let the developers get it a week early, and that would probably make all the difference in the world. Yeah. They won support.
Yeah, and again, I didn't mean that for serious developers. I mean the people will actually try to work on the thing. I don't want it a week early for the sake of, like, I'm a developer and I want my candy before you get a shot at it, right? Like,
yeah, but I mean, they can obviously—they know who they have the app store, so they know who the serious developers are, right? And
mostly.
If you sell, you know, 5 apps a year, you're probably not a serious developer.
Right.
If you, you know, have 100,000 downloads in a week or something, those guys probably should have the new device.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a hiccup for me personally because I used my personal account that had like 0 apps on it.
Right. So, yeah.
Oops. But whatever. It's still a good system. That's still a good way of judging stuff. Right. What do you think about the watch then?
You know, I enjoy using, you know, WatchKit 2.0. I just don't necessarily use the watch, which is kind of funny because it's one of the few pieces of Apple hardware I just can't get into. I don't know if it's a mixture of it being too slow and not enough functionality or what, but I definitely I've been playing around, or I played around with the watch for the last couple of weeks and doing WatchKit 2.0 stuff, and it was a lot of fun. Little reminded me a lot of client server type computing from the old days.
It's very much what it is, right? It's like a dumb presentation layer. It's like almost like a 4GL,
the thin wrist client.
It was definitely like that in 1.0. In 2.0, you definitely have more. You can run a full on app on the watch. It just might not be the best approach depending on what you're doing. But 2.0, you definitely have a lot more capability to do stuff on the device. You can do network calls directly to some server somewhere, not necessarily route it through your iPhone app. So I like the API. It's in a way fun playing with it, but I don't wear the watch on a daily basis anymore.
It's
a combination of slow hardware and not being able to filter notifications that show on the watch. It's all or nothing for a given application, and I kind of just want very few notifications from Twitter, for example, on the watch, and I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I just, I enjoy coding for it, but the device itself, maybe 2.0 will be better, or 3.0, or whatever they call it, watch, the new Apple Watch, or whatever they launch next year. But this one is kind of just sitting on my desk.
I'm kind of the same way.
For coding.
Yeah. Did you ever watch before the Apple Watch was introduced?
I did not. Not for years. I mean, maybe before I had a phone.
Sure, yeah.
And when I actually had a job. but not since then.
Yeah. So it's asking you
about
to
a decade sort of or so.
Create a new habit for something that's maybe not that useful.
Yeah, and I did. I wore it for a couple months, and then I was just like, okay, what happens if I don't wear it for a little bit of time? I'm like, going to miss it, and I didn't miss it.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Plus, I wear like a dressy watch. If I have to go someplace and look nice, I wear my Apple Watch.
I don't go anywhere, and I don't have to look nice. So. It works out.
Perfect. Apple Watch is interesting in that it's the only product that they announced that I was excited to see how it would work, but I couldn't figure out what I would do with it. Do you kind of share that feeling in that, like, you can see the TV and know what you want to do, or an iPad Pro and you know what to do? It feels unique and it's in that way.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of almost feel the same way with the iPad Pro, because to me, it's, maybe I'll feel difference once I have one in my hands, but it just kind of looks to me like a bigger iPad. And
I should say I'm excited about the pencil input.
Yeah. I was going to originally get one, just, the low end model without the pencil, but I think I might get a pencil just to see.
Yeah,
if it's good for taking, quick notes of, how to do stuff. And instead of my little $1 notepad, I'll try the, $800 iPad plus $100 pencil, or $130, however much it is.
Yeah, it gets up there. Yeah, I do think that the pencil is the interesting part of that product. I mean, it's a super fast, pretty big computer that's kind of cool. But the pencil input is sort of the interesting direction.
Yeah, I'll have to see. I don't like writing stuff in general.
Yeah,
so I'm more of a typer. But it'll be it'll definitely be interesting to see how useful that pencil is.
Mm-hmm.
How useful the whole product is. I mean, it's definitely useful for people who are creative. Type who you draw and that kind of stuff, but for someone like me, I don't know.
Like Michael Johnson, Dr. Wave was just eating it up.
Yeah,
he does tools at Pixar,
right?
And so
clearly
he's going to will
love it because he can. Use that to do whatever drawing stuff he likes to do, but
doing the doodles,
Paintbot. Yeah. I'm just throwing that out there, Paintbot.
But I don't know about it. What I'm gonna do with it. It'll be interesting to see, and it'll be kind of interesting to see how apps adapt to it. Something like Calcbot is gonna look pretty huge on that.
Yeah.
Big screen.
Did you see James Thompson put pCalc on the TV?
Yeah.
it's kind of awesome.
Yeah. And like,
awesome. And it's kind of funny to have a giant calculator on your TV. That's all.
Right. Yeah. And, he puts that on everything. And
yeah,
we kind of just decided that it didn't really make much sense. To do so.
Well, you let James go first. The door was dark inside, and you let him go into the room just to see what would happen.
Yeah,
to him.
See how bad he gets mauled by the the new version of stuff.
Well, I think that's part of why I like it. Is that it just doesn't make sense? So that's awesome. Works. It's pretty good too. Like, it's got all kinds of features. It's worth checking out for anybody. But But it's weird to have a calculator on your TV.
Right. And it's a because you can type of thing. And I try not to do that. But we'll see when we added watch support. And I don't think that's particularly super useful at this point. But
well, I think that depends on the user, right? I think you probably get a lot of notifications on Twitter because you have a pretty large number of followers.
Right.
So maybe people who have, like, there's a sweet spot in that, right? Like somebody less than you that doesn't get notified that much.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely maybe somebody who will be super happy about it. People do ask for it. And, you know, that's, you know, one of the reasons we did it is because people kept asking for watch support. So,
yeah. That's always tricky with features is that I find people ask for features sometimes that they don't want to use, but they think a product should have.
Right.
And they're kind of adamant about it. And it's like, well, you're not actually going to use that feature. Just
well, that's that whole of all people want is a faster horse argument. That most people don't know what they want. And most people tell you what the solution that they think they want instead of the problem that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so.
I think one of the key things is...
I'm sure, and I'm sure I do that to other developers too. Like, oh man, I really need X and I don't. I just get it stuck in my head that I want X and I haven't really thought it through yet.
Well, you're good because I provide feedback to Guy on Napkin all the time because I use it every day and he'll be like, "What you're telling me this, but what I'm hearing is that." And I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get into mutual admiration, but I mean, it helps when I can tell you no.
Yes.
Like you're a very good customer to have and you're my friend and I can just explain what our thought process is. So. Which actually we try to do with Elk. I'd probably do the same thing. I actually try to explain the thought process behind a decision in the app.
We can. We do sometimes. It's hard, 140 characters at a time, which
You
know, where we mostly get our questions and comments.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't even try on Twitter. I'm basically just very grateful on Twitter. Like, thanks for pointing that out. We're checking on it.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. And then sometimes they'll ask for stuff that we would love to do, but we can't for whatever reason. You know, there's no Twitter API for it. Or
why can't you list the people who unfollowed me with their home addresses, Paul, so I can go there and fix it?
Yeah, yeah. Surprisingly, we don't get a lot of requests for the whole unfollow thing, which I think would probably be a pretty popular feature if we were to add it on there, but obviously that's a thing Twitter would not like. But you know, I think it'd be kind of a cool feature to have on there.
Wait, why would Twitter not like that?
I think in general, most social networks don't like calling attention to negative actions.
Yeah. Okay.
So you know, like Facebook, I don't use Facebook, but I think as the last time I looked, they don't have a dislike button, right?
They're talking about it, which is an odd choice because some people think that what they really mean is an empathy button. Not I dislike what you're doing, but I feel bad for you, because liking someone who has tragic news feels wrong as well.
Oh yeah, man, I hate that on Twitter. Like giving somebody a star for like, oh, my dog died, here's a cute picture and I'm very sad. Star. Like, no, I kind of want to show
like
some
heart
empathy,
button or something.
You know? Yeah. So
right.
Dislike is horrible. Like if you do it. Yeah. Don't encourage mean comments on the internet. They happen anyway.
Yes.
So,
yeah. And I think on Facebook, you can follow us or you can add a friend or you can just ignore, right? You can't say no.
Right.
Unless they change that too.
You can follow people without being their friends and you can be their friends without following them, I think is what you can do.
Okay.
Well, that's getting complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get Facebook.
No. Glad to hear you don't.
That's why there's no Facebook.
Yeah, just not my thing. So, you know, Twitter is the one that made sense for me, and I just haven't gotten into any of the other social networks.
LinkedIn bot.
Yeah.
No, fortunately, I don't have an account on there, which means I don't get tons of spam from recruiters or...
They are tricky, by the way. I do have an account, and every now and then I'll get an email... suggesting people I may know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like ex-girlfriends and stuff in there and people that are like, I do know, but I'm like, how do you know that I know these people?
Right.
At some point you accidentally shared your address book with them. And
well, I mean, the ex I'm thinking about is like from like 15 years ago, but we went to school together. So they figured that out somehow. But man, it's creepy when you get, it is kind of funny because I mean, I got one that's like, do you know Bertrand Soleil? I'm like, yeah, I know of him.
I'm not going to add
him to my LinkedIn connections.
It's scary how much some of those networks know about you.
Yeah.
It's pretty wacky. So where do you see the future for the company, really? And Cheatbot, I guess, in specific.
I know, at least for the short term, we're going to be at least focusing the rest of the year on updates to Tweetbot. Like I mentioned earlier, we just added or finished adding watch support whenever it gets through app review.
Your touch ID, your 3D touch support was amazing, especially early on. It was really consistent and it made me, it was one of the few apps where you felt like almost anywhere that you would press, logically, you'd get a result for.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of other places we need to add it in because we added it to the timeline, which it covers at least 80% of the places where you'd want it, but there's other places to add it in as well. And, but we kind of wanted to get it out as well because every day it's not out. It's people asking you where, you know, when's it coming out and, you know. Always lots of fun trying to catch up to whatever the latest and greatest feature is. But I think for the rest of the year, we're pretty much going to be focusing hard on updating both the iOS and the Mac apps. Next year, probably going to start looking at doing something different.
Cool.
I don't know what, but, you know, we'd like to get at least hopefully get one application, one new application done every year. So we shall see. I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe we'll finally get around to revisiting Waitbot and figure out what to do with that.
Some people seem to get upset at that you don't bring every app up to speed all the time constantly. And that sounds like something when you have is it a three-person shop? With Todd?
Two, three.
Yeah.
Depends on.
That you have to make choices, but those choices are always going to service people who like the ones that you make and not service the people who have different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then people complain, you haven't updated a ConvertBot in 4 years. I feel cheated. Like, okay. Not really much we can do about that. But yeah, it's tricky when you don't have a million developers to throw at something. And, you know, when we work on something, we're very focused on that one application, trying to get it done. And, I think it works for us, but definitely upsets some people.
Well, I think something people don't necessarily understand is that you can't make the kind of apps that you guys do with a million people. Like, if you had that many people, you would need to be making different apps in order to support them, first of all. So there's a sweet spot there in terms of how many people you can have and get something that's so focused and directed and specific. And it's just the realities of the situation mean that you need to move your resources from time to time.
Yeah, and we also get kind of tired and want to do something different every once in a while. And, we'd love to have another big hit app out there for no other reason than it would, you know, diminish the risk of Twitter coming in and saying, oh, we changed our minds, no more clients or something to that effect.
Yeah. So. That'd be bad. Mm-hmm. Is there, so for the users, there's a token limit, right?
Yeah.
And Tweetbot 4 is still using the same token as 3?
Yes.
Okay, so you have the same allocation. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yes. But there is a finite number that you can get to, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a limit in there somewhere.
Yeah. So that's a bummer.
You saw apps on other platforms that were new hit those really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's we had the way it works is you get at least 100,000 or double the number you had the day they announced the limit. So new apps, especially if they're free or pirated quite a bit, will tend to hit that 100,000 limit very, very quickly. Especially since the people who try third-party apps will normally have multiple Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
And
that's a bummer, especially the piracy thing. It's like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, it happens, and a lot of people got bit by it earlier. I think the developers who are left, for the most part, have had successful apps before this limit got imposed and are able to coast on those limits. But it killed a bunch of Windows clients and mm-hmm. some of the Android ones as well.
So you're laughing. I'm just joking. So how do you feel about the Mac? In terms of being a platform as a book, because not a lot of people are on both these days. You know what I mean? There's a lot of iOS developers, but you go both ways.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely use a Mac every day, and I prefer, I use the Mac more than I use iOS devices, but I prefer coding for iOS devices than coding for the Mac. I think I complained about AppKit a couple years ago.
Mm hmm.
And it's pretty much the same thing now. I'm not, I don't know. I wish the UI layers of both systems were more compatible with each other. Mm-hmm. Photos app apparently has a UX kit that's, UI kit or some subset of UI kit for Mac, and I wish Apple would open that up and let us port stuff to and fro a little more easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, even just a basic subset like let's say UI image, color, Bezier path, that kind of stuff would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly help. I would, I think AppKit has had its time, and I think it's time to start something else on the Mac side of things that's a little more modern and a little less kludged together at this point. And not to offend any Apple developers, but AppKit's been around for
20 plus years
or something. Yeah,
20 plus.
And before that, it was OpenStep and NextStep, and it's kind of all it's time, I think, to move that over to legacy mode and bring something else in, at least if they want to have a bunch more developers on the platform, if they want to, bring over some of those iOS guys who are creating all those apps.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know I still don't think UIKit is rich enough to support AppKit style apps, but it is getting better, especially stuff like the UI focus engine in TV OS is interesting, and stuff that they've added for the iPad Pro is interesting because the Mac does a lot, right? So, and also, I don't think you're going to find anybody inside Apple who's seen the AppKit source code. I'm pretty sure they'll be like, yeah, that's a rough patch of code sometimes.
But like I said, it's not that it's that they've done a bad job with it. It's been out there so long, and it's got so many kludges from previous OS releases. And,
if anything, I think they've done an amazing job, because 20 years with one framework is like remarkable. Going from a small company like Next to basically running the world with iOS and the Mac, Good work on those frameworks. You know?
Yeah. Right, right. And, you know, I definitely don't feel the same way about UIKit. That UIKit I still enjoy. And, you know, there's a few bits in there that I think are ready to be redone as well. But it's not on the same level as AppKit as far as, you know, I'd like to throw the whole thing out and start over, just, you know, new framework, preferably UIKit like on the Mac side of things.
I think one of the luxuries UIKit enjoys too is that the only way you can be running an iOS app is through the store or through Apple's sort of approval process. That's not entirely true because there's enterprise and other stuff, but they can move more rapidly to deprecate parts of iOS than they can the Mac.
Yeah, probably, but it's, you know, on Mac they could version frameworks. I mean, that support has been there for
since day one,
for at least 2 decades, right? So, you know, there's ways to handle that on Mac side of things. I don't know why they don't use those ways, but there's definitely, you know, ways around that.
Yeah, I think I read some reason, and it was like a bad one. I mean, it wasn't bad that they weren't doing it, but it was something like the, because the way the versioning works relies upon a link, right? Like a symlink inside the framework. And I think there was something about them not trusting that. like it didn't, well, it didn't work for some various thing. And it's like, oh, well, that's
bad. They've had it forever. So I don't know why they wouldn't do it a different way if it needs to be done a different way or what.
Whatever. The super smart, they can fix it if they want, right?
Right. The compiler and frameworks people are very, very smart. And, you know, I trust that they're able to work around something like a symlink.
Yeah, I forget what it was. And whatever, I'm probably just being, I'm just creating FUD at this point. But there was something weird that was like, oh, that versioning thing doesn't work anymore. So not that they can't fix it or make a new one.
Right.
Anyway.
There's ways, right?
There's ways. There's always ways.
I don't know if they're good ways or not, but
sure bad ways are always the best ways, though. It's always a fun way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, Paul. Anything specific you want to plug? Go buy your apps.
Yeah, I'm not a big plug guy. If you're listening to this, you probably already run my app anyway. So
buy a couple for a friend.
Yeah, gift to a friend.
It's a holiday season.
There you go. Which you can't do links anymore for, right? You can't do a gift to a friend link in the app notes because they disabled that functionality a while back. But, you know,
yeah
go buy for a friend or wait till we're done with the sale and buy it.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you should do. In fact, this will come out a little bit later. So hopefully your sale will be done and go buy the app at full price.
There you go.
Perfect. Cool. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Oh, sure.